Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond. A podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch. Today, we spend a large part of our lives in digital environments, browsing and searching for information, sharing and communicating in social networks, playing games online. The internet and social media have enabled us to move from being passive consumers to active participators. But the skills we need go far beyond the ones required in a non-digital environment. We have to learn to use digital tools in a variety of situations, both in the workplace and in our private lives. So we need to be digitally literate. There are many different definitions of digital literacy. Some focus on what a digitally literate person should be able to do. For example, the American Library Association's Digital Literacy Task Force defines it as the ability to use information and communication technologies to find, evaluate, create, and communicate information, requiring both cognitive and technical skills. Others provide broader definitions that focus on what a digitally literate person should be able to achieve. The UK Nonprofit Organisation for Digital Services and Solutions, JISC, provides the following definition. Digital literacies are those capabilities which fit an individual for living, learning, and working in a digital society. Thus, digital literacy is not just about being able to confidently navigate the digital sphere and find information and consume it. It's also about being able to use digital technologies to actively create and communicate. Henry Jenkins, Professor of Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California, wrote in his book Convergence Culture, Where Old and New Media Collide, just as we would not traditionally assume that someone is literate if they can read but not write, we should not assume that someone possesses media literacy if they can consume but not express themselves. And of course, the same is true of digital media. So students also need to be given opportunities to actively create and participate in a digital environment. The problem is, however, that although young people are digitally enabled, having grown up with technology as an integral part of their lives, they have not yet acquired the skills they need to be able to communicate effectively using digital means. As Renee Hobbs explains in her book, Create to Learn, Introduction to Digital Literacy, published in 2017, even though the digital tools are literally at our fingertips, most people are not routinely creating media as part of daily life. The way we communicate has changed since the emergence of the internet and social media. The internet is participatory, and as a result, it's become very easy to spread ideas. In addition, we can potentially reach a vast number of people. But communicating online is more complex than many people think. If communication is going to be effective, we have to consider what our message is, who the target audience is, what action we may want them to take, and which medium is best for reaching them. Perhaps a blog or website, maybe a podcast, using images or creating an infographic, using videos such as vlogs and explainer videos, or digital storytelling. Or maybe even remixing existing content. The choice will depend both on the audience and on the personal preference of the creator. Let's take a closer look at what each of these media offer. A blog is an effective way of presenting and sharing information, often in a conversational style. Blogs are usually updated on a regular basis, and the content is displayed in reverse chronological order. Engagement on the part of the reader is actively encouraged, as there's typically a comments section where they can post their thoughts. A podcast is similar to a blog in as far as it presents and shares information. Of course, in addition, it harnesses the power of the human voice, using it to create a connection between the speaker and the listener. Its appeal partly lies in the fact that the listener can choose when and where they listen to it, so maybe in the car, while out for a walk, or when doing sport. A podcast concentrates on a particular topic or theme, and each episode is usually self-contained, so doesn't presuppose that the listener has heard other ones. Importantly, the creator also has to find both the right physical and authorial voice. Images, with or without a short text, can be very powerful, as can be seen from the rise of image-based social media sites such as Instagram. A carefully chosen visual appeals to our emotions and creates a sense of authenticity and immediacy. There's a lot of truth in the saying, a picture's worth a thousand words. Infographics convey sometimes complex data in a format that's easier to comprehend. As Hobbes explains, great infographics tell a story and develop a main idea using images and data. They can be useful for explaining a complex process, comparing and contrasting, presenting a timeline or sequence, or pulling something apart to see its constituent parts. Good infographics make use of powerful images to support key facts, play with font size and colour to highlight important data, and make use of a balanced and clear layout that ensure that the information is easy to follow. Video can be used in different ways depending on the goal. A vlog is a personal and usually informal form of video presentation in which the vlogger communicates directly with the viewer. It's more dynamic than a blog and enables a person to share thoughts, feelings and information using an informal video format. A screencast or screen capture video is a digital video recording of a person's computer screen and usually includes audio narration. It can be used to record presentations or to create how-to videos, among other things. The internet is full of explainer videos, and young people in particular often use them. In 2020, the Gym Plus survey found that young people would rather watch a video than read online, which is why they often turn to YouTube to find help with learning. An explainer video does exactly what it says. It explains a key concept or addresses a particular problem. It's concise, incorporates a mix of different media, and provides information piece by piece, often repeating key facts. Some might also include tasks, especially in a learning context. Digital storytelling is a powerful way of presenting a personal story. It's also sometimes used in online feature stories as a way of engaging the audience on a more immediate and personal level. It also provides a more immersive experience. Leslie Rule at the Center for Digital Storytelling in California defines it as follows. Digital storytelling is the modern expression of the ancient art of storytelling. Digital stories derive their power by weaving images, music, narrative and voice together, thereby giving deep dimension and vivid colour to characters, situations, experiences and insights. Ever since digital tools have become more accessible, remixing digital media has become widespread. Yet the idea itself isn't new. It's something that past generations have done with fairy stories, legends, songs, especially folk songs, retelling them and in so doing changing the content to add a new dimension or twist. Due to the proliferation of digital tools in the 21st century, Lawrence Lessig, law professor at Stanford University, sees remix as a literacy for this generation. In his 2008 book, Remix: Making Art and Commerce Thrive in the Hybrid Economy, he takes on copyright law, saying that it needs to be updated to fit the digital reality we now live in. He explains that we've moved from a read-only to a read-write culture, in which we create as readily as we consume. Whereas the read-only culture is one in which we passively consume what is being created by professionals, in the read-write culture, both professionals and amateurs create, and there's a reciprocal relationship between the producer and consumer. The read-write culture invites a response rather than just consumption. So what exactly is it? In their 2013 book Digital Literacies, Dudney, Hockley and Pegram discuss the importance of remix literacy within their framework of digital literacies. They define it as the ability to create new meanings by sampling, modifying and or combining pre-existing texts and artifacts, as well as circulating, interpreting, responding to and building on others' remixes within digital networks. They provide examples such as altering the slogan on an advert to subvert the original message, to combine two pre-existing songs to create a dialogue between the lyrics, to add creative subtitles to a film to surprise viewers. It's a way of simultaneously critiquing and creating. These are just some of the options open to us when participating in the digital sphere. In many cases, we'll find that a combination of different forms is most effective. So, incorporating an infographic or images into a blog post for maximum effect. But no matter which one or ones we choose, they all have one thing in common. They're all about communication. So what are some of the key steps that students will need when creating a digital product? A first step, whatever the task, is for the students to analyse examples of the media that they intend to produce. So they need to have a critical look at the structure of the blog, website, podcast or video to see how the creator reaches out and connects with their audience, how the content is presented. Is it presented in a factual manner? Are links and or sources provided? What do we learn about the person behind it? They need to take a closer look at the design, the layout, typeface, colours, use of images, music, audio, to see whether there's a call to action. How professional does it seem? Is it updated on a regular basis? At the same time, it's also important to look at different examples, as there's no such thing as the definitive vlog or website. A lot depends on individual style. By analysing what other people have created, students will be able to discuss what they like, what they find effective or not, and which elements they feel are necessary when creating their own. This will also enable students to think about how to develop their own personal voice. Of course, this not only applies to their preferred tone and style for presenting the content, but in the case of audio, also to their actual physical voice. It's a chance to experiment with the pitch, the speed. People generally suggest speaking more slowly than one might be used to doing, as well as the emotional tones and colour. However, even if the tone is informal, it still needs to be professional. As with all tasks, creating digital content also requires research. It's important at this stage that students research effectively and efficiently. So identify search terms to get the required results, practice click restraint, are able to identify trustworthy sources, and avoid getting sidetracked. They need to keep track of where they find their information to enable them to cite their sources, and to make notes rather than just copying chunks of text so as to avoid plagiarism. Planning and good project management are also key. Students need to keep the final deadline in mind and adhere to the milestones along the way. It can be helpful to create a rough prototype early on that can be improved as the product goes through different iterative cycles, rather than only being put together once everything is perfect. Believe me, this just doesn't happen. And finally, once the product has been shipped, it's key to look back at the creation process and to evaluate what's been achieved, what went well, and what could have gone better. In some cases, there'll also be an opportunity to make changes once the audience has provided feedback. Many of these steps will stand students in good stead when they're working on projects in the workplace as their key project management skills. A couple of notes on digital tasks. Firstly, we need to ensure that the tasks students are given are really authentic and not just paying lip service to digital literacy. For instance, getting students to write a blog post sounds as if we're building on digital literacy, but unless the work is actually going to be posted, it's not authentic. There's no incentive for students to write a blog post to be read by the teacher. This is clearly a language exercise. However, if it's going to be shared and read by others, it transforms this task into one where the language is a means to an end because it's being used to share thoughts and opinions with others. This is something that Clay Shirky discussed in an interview for the news and opinion website Salon. As a teacher at New York University, he assigned his students to write for one another rather than just for him as their professor. He said that by doing so, they thought, my peers are going to read this, and also my professor is going to read this. You'd think they'd be more concerned about me reading it, but the quality goes up when they know their friends are going to read it. Ideally, in the English language classroom, these ideas would be shared with native speakers or others with whom communication has to take place in English, as this is the common language. Secondly, it's important to also involve students in the process of deciding which medium is the most appropriate for the task at hand. While in some cases the medium will be dictated by the task in question, in other cases it's helpful to get students to reflect on which medium would be most suitable and why. As said before, this will depend on the target group. Creating a Facebook page for teenagers wouldn't be appropriate, as they often don't have a Facebook account. A vlog isn't really an appropriate way of presenting complex data. Likewise, it might well be preferable to contact a person for a podcast interview via email rather than WhatsApp, especially in light of the fact that they will need to provide more detailed information about the podcast, as well as a permission form to record the person's voice. And creative constraints are also important. Although we might like to think that total freedom is a perfect condition for creativity, in fact, numerous studies have shown that it can be paralysing. In his short TED-Ed animation, The Power of Creative Constraints, Brandon Rodriguez says, Constraints aren't the boundaries of creativity, but the foundation of it. A study on creativity and constraint published in the Journal of Management in 2018 by Akar et al. Showed that when options are limited, people tend to generate more varied solutions rather than less varied ones. This is, of course, something that teachers are familiar with. A carefully designed assignment that is specific and clearly outlines what is expected will promote learning, whereas one that is couched in vague terms or doesn't have a clear goal will not facilitate learning. Some people question the need to include all of these skills in English lessons, saying they should be part of a wider digital literacy curriculum. They're understandably concerned about time constraints, as there's so much else to cover in English lessons. But at the same time, these skills are actually important from a language perspective. Let's take a closer look at the example of tagging. When creating a blog post, the actual writing of the post is only one, albeit central, aspect. Blogs are written as a form of communication, so commenting on a post and replying to readers' comments are an integral part of doing this. Most people would agree with it. But to be able to reach one's audience, a key component is learning which tags to use for search engine optimization. Most of the popular blog platforms offer this functionality, although it remains underused. Tags are a way of describing specific details of a post and are thus different from categories. If you're creating a classroom blog, for instance, you might decide to assign the posts to different categories to allow readers to find out what they're looking for more easily. So it's like a table of contents for your blog site. Tags are keywords that help people and search engines to find specific pieces of information. So they're similar to the entries in an index in a book. Using tags is a helpful way to get students to reflect on the structure and content of their post. It shouldn't be an afterthought, but one that they take into account when they're drafting it. And of course, it's a way of focusing on key terms in English. Similarly, if students are creating a post for Instagram, they should think of appropriate hashtags to accompany their post. Adding hyperlinks to online text is also key. Whereas some might feel that this is not relevant in an English-speaking context and should be done in computer class, it offers a chance for students to reflect on the content and intercultural aspects of an online text. As students are writing their text, they should be thinking about whether it contains information that might need further explanation for someone who's from a different cultural background. If so, it could be helpful to add links to clarify meaning. And Nikki Hockley, Director of Pedagogy of the Consultants E, gives a simple example of how remixing can be done in the English classroom using the image meme, Keep Calm and Carry On. She begins by breaking down the structure of the image. There's usually the British monarch's crown at the top. It's followed by the words Keep Calm on two separate lines, then And. And this is usually followed by two more words. And the whole message is in caps. Once students have understood the structure, they can be encouraged to create their own version of the meme. Following this, they can search for another meme, analyse it, and again create their own version. Digital literacy is an ongoing process. It's not something that we learn once and can then simply do. The digital sphere is constantly changing and presenting new challenges and opportunities, so we need to be aware of what's going on. As John F. Kennedy said, change is the law of life, and those who look only to the past or present are certain to miss the future. The fact that today we can connect with people all over the world means that we have unique opportunities for learning and sharing information. To do so, it's imperative that we provide students with opportunities to hone their digital communication skills. As Renee Hobbs observes in her book, Create to Learn, Introduction to Digital Literacy, having a variety of different experiences in expressing ideas in different formats will strengthen your overall skills as a communicator and lifelong learner. Thanks for listening.
Teaching English Today, The Four C's and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachen lernen fürs Leben.